Welcome to the Ira Kaufman Podcast, back again. It's already March, Ira. I can't believe it. And you know what? We're 9 days from free agency. Where it's here. March is here.
You are salivating over that dinner bell. Absolutely salivating.
I'm assuming I'm going to live to tomorrow. And March is here. It's free agency. It's the Ira Kaufman Podcast. This is the time of year, Ira. This is the season of hope. This is where most of the teams in the NFL, 2 weeks from now, their fans are thinking, we're going to the Super Bowl. This is it. This is our playoff year.
And we might be close to finding out, Steve, just how much of an allure this franchise is for potential free agents. Now, while I agree with my comrades here at Joe Bucks Fan that money tells the tune, for the most part, in free agency, there's always some ancillary, you know, like if a team is 3-13, you know, some veteran guy is going to think twice about coming, or might. And the Bucks are not that far removed from 2-14, gentlemen.
Well, let's first things first, Ari. Your podcast presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, the good folks that keep you afloat, and who we love so much, and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, Ira, that's the only luxury dealership in Brandon. I repeat, that's the only luxury dealership in Brandon. Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon.com, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa.com. That's where you want to start your vehicle shopping search. It's time to take a vacation, Ira. Still time to take a vacation. We're coming to the end. But buy with zero down and make zero payments for 3 months.
I can't believe it's lasted this long, Steve. Amazing. Amazing program.
Zero down and make zero payments for 3 months. Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, or drive new ATSs, $319 a month. XT5s, $439 a month. Take a vacation. Unbelievable, Ira.
Lee, for 90 days, you're living like a king. You're not even thinking about making a payment.
Living large.
That's not bad.
No, of course, of course, approved credit. See the dealer for all the details.
By that time, the draft's over, Lee. We're talking about a ways away over there, 3 months.
Heck, it's Memorial Day weekend.
There you go.
Your podcast, Ira. Folks, you want to subscribe to Ira's podcast on iTunes. Very easy. You can just go right to your iPhone. Go to podcasts. Search Bucks, search Ira Kaufman, search Buccaneers.
You don't have to empty your wallet, right, Steve?
You don't have to empty anything. You just click on subscribe, and you get a nice alert when it posts. So if you hate JoeBucksFan.com, you can just listen to Ira on your phone. Very simple.
And
same thing for Bucks Uncensored as well by the commish. And same thing for Todd Wright's Fantasy Football Podcast, which is going year-round.
And for people who are just getting into podcasts, you hear the word subscribe. That's a misnomer. No credit card needed. No wallet needed. It's free.
And, Steve, with the lack of a local sports talk radio show in the morning here in Tampa, you know, our listeners can plug us in, listen to our podcast. They got the commish. While you're driving around in traffic, it'll make for a lot nicer commute.
Well, we had our Twitter just yesterday from a gentleman. He's in Europe. He's a Bucks fan. He follows Joe Bucks Fan religiously, and he listens to his podcasts on his commutes, and he thanked us for talking about renting cheerleaders last week.
We're crossing international boundaries over here, and we're crossing international taste, by the way, too, with some of our subjects.
Actually, I think, Ira, I think to correct some of the fake news that's out there, it is you who's causing the riots in Sweden, not the refugee situation, just in case anybody wasn't sure on that. All right, now, Ira, let's get down to business. You wrote a column last week for JoeBucksFan.com. You do a few things that we pay you for, so thank you.
I got away from free agency for a minute, Steve, for a minute.
You started talking Ring of Honor, exploring who's next, number 10 in the Buccaneers Ring of Honor. Who is number 10?
And I noticed, Steve, last year the Bucks made the announcement in January, where they normally make it in the summer.
Why, don't you?
Yeah. Well, they wanted to get Lynch, sneak him in before the, you know, the Hall of Fame.
Well, they were trying to help you out. They thought they were.
And I do appreciate that. I do appreciate it.
Now, I'm not sure if Lee read your column, because based on something he said earlier, but let me, I want to dial in and look at his face when I say
I
this.
Read your
this is going to be a beauty.
Lee, Ira makes the case.
Logic dictates.
After going through some big names in Bucks history, Ira says, number 10 in the Ring of Honor, Mr. Tony Dungy.
Oh.
Now, come on. Now, describe the Kemper.
Logic after how many shots?
Describe the Kemper's face right now, Steve, to our listeners.
Pained.
To describe it. Pained expression, to put it mildly.
Disgust, pain,
You're going to honor a guy who won one division title with his team over a guy who has three times as many division titles and, by the way, a Super Bowl ring.
Well, if you're suggesting Gruden should go in before Dungy,
it's no-brainer.
A no-brainer?
No-brainer.
Who turned a moribund? There's your word for today, Steve. And I think moribund's putting it lightly. They were a national joke. They were fodder for Johnny Carson.
And they still were. His offense was still a joke.
Meanwhile, after it took him nine games to turn this franchise around. Who does that? Nine games.
Let me put it to you this way.
By the end of the 96 season, the Bucs were a competitive football team. They won five of their last seven, and then they had a breakthrough season. Nobody does that in nine games.
Only Sam Weish could take over a team with three potential Hall of Famers and not win games. Only someone
And who was under center all those years, Mr. DeCamper?
Who put him under center?
Your friend and mine, Trent Dilfer.
Who put him there?
He didn't draft Dilfer.
He could have got rid of him, which they eventually did.
See the debate we got going here, Steve?
He drafted Jackass Green. They relied on Jackass Green for a weapon. Jackass Green.
I'm going to say this, Steve, and this is going to be my final word on this topic. I don't think I need to expound any further.
Hall of Famer.
The man's a Hall of Famer.
Which?
He's the first coach you ever
hired.
A slap
in the face to reason.
And he's a Hall of Famer, and he did his best work in Tampa. And you don't think he belongs in the Ring of Honor?
How you guys
could put? What the heck's going on?
How you guys? When I see you guys, and I respect you, you Ira, and your colleagues.
What are you,
in
Mike
the room,
Florio Jr. with this
on this particular subject? You darn right.
Oh boy,
Tony Dungy is Don Coryell, a one-dimensional coach.
You want Terrell Owens in and Tony Dungy out?
I didn't say I want Terrell Owens in. I'm not a Terrell Owens fan. Right. I wrote a post about that the other day. I'm not shedding any crocodile tears over Terrell Owens. You know, God forbid your actions have consequences. So I'm in lockstep with you guys.
Steve, the Tony Dungy skeptics simply haven't done their homework.
I suggest otherwise.
He is a historic, and I don't use that word lightly. He's a historic winner as a NFL head coach. 668. It's implanted in my brain, Steve, because I used it, you know, three times when I was making the presentation for him. 668 winning percentage. Belichick is like 674. He's slightly ahead of him with Tom Brady all these years. Slightly ahead of now, I'm not saying Tony Dungy is ahead of Bill Belichick in the Pantheon. That'd be silly. Belichick's got the rings, and Dungy's got one.
I wish I knew this subject was going to happen. I would have done my research, but I'm pretty sure Jerry Glanville has a better playoff record than Tony Dungy.
Now you're being very picky with the playoff record.
The body of work
says Dungy is a Hall of Famer.
Well, let me say this:
certainly a Ring of Honor recipient.
If he was such as this next Tom Landry that some people make him out to be. How come he couldn't win a Super Bowl title in Tampa? Gruden comes in with a few adjustments on offense. Boom, they win a Super Bowl.
Because they didn't put enough resources into their offense.
And why was that?
Their offense wasn't good enough.
Why was that?
I don't know. Ask
Warren Sapp, John Lynch, and Brad Johnson, including Brad Johnson just a couple weeks ago on Tallahassee Radio, are openly admitting if they didn't have Gruden, they don't win a Super Bowl. Have you ever heard someone say that about Tom Landry, about Chuck Knoll, about Vince Lombardi, about Don Shula, about Paul Brown? Of course not. What's the common denominator or the non-common denominator? Dungy.
Tony Dungy almost made the Super Bowl with Sean King under center.
Do I need to continue, gentlemen?
Must we continue?
Yeah.
Must we?
Jeff Hostetler won a Super Bowl because of the Giants.
He only had Brad Johnson one season.
And he got clobbered by Philly in the playoffs.
Philly had a heck of a team. I find your argument specious, Mr. DeCamper. Specious.
Well,
we're talking about the Ring of Honor.
Did
Tony Dungy turn this franchise around?
I'm not saying Dungy shouldn't be in the Ring of Honor. He shouldn't go in it before Gruden.
I disagree.
Now specious and Pantheon have made the podcast in your list of vocabulary words, Ira. Now, you guys eventually, maybe in the summer.
I'm irritated here.
You guys in the summer, you'll have that full throttle Hall of Fame cage match debate, which I know you've had off the air before. You'll let it all out.
Don't you put a guy who's already in Canton? Steve, you put him in your Ring of Honor?
Well, listen. This is not
should you go Ring of Honor in Pittsburgh then,
this
too?
This is not a Canton discussion. This is the Buccaneers Ring of Honor discussion. That's what your column was about.
And half his career was spent in Tampa.
And
how many years of Gruden
I'll say this. I think Tony Dungy with the Bucs is an extremely worthy Ring of Honor candidate.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
Absolutely, extremely worthy. And he should be in the Buccaneers Ring of Honor. Hands down, no brainer. The Hall of Fame thing, I think that's a little bit more interesting. And I think Lee's little nugget of saying he is a coach. Very few Hall of Fame coaches were fired so they could another guy could win a Super Bowl. And that's really what happened here. That's very unique among Hall of Fame coaches.
One division title.
And is a little bit different. But where I'm going to say this, Ira, is the question is, what's the decision of next? Who's next?
Who's
number
next?
10.
Who's next?
Now, I think you're sort of assuming that Team Glazer has some sort of mindset as to whoever's next should be most deserving. Is that what? Do you believe that they look at it that way?
Well, I did notice that they honored Sapp and Brooks the year they went into the
yes.
Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they went into the Hall or not, they might have been next in line anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what the criteria is because the Glazers really haven't explained it, Lee. Mm-hmm. It's their decision.
Yeah, it's
not Dirk Cutter or Jason Light's decision.
Yeah, it's close to the vest with the Glazers. Yeah,
close to the vest. You know, I doubt they're calling up Bill Belichick and asking him who he thinks should be next. I mentioned several other worthy candidates.
Rondé?
I do. Rondé, James Wilder is strong.
Now, that's an interesting
I did leave
one.
Out Hardy Nickerson, which
yes,
I think is a good one.
And that was horrendous, Ira. I read that column. I was like,
now, you as my editor could have edited that in or give me a little phone call over there, Steve.
Ira, come on.
That's what a good editor does.
Mr. Isner.
He's got a point, but I don't want to cost him. I don't want to see you dock your pay. So.
No, Ira, it's not something I would call you on because it's something we discussed in the podcast. I figured you.
Well, I mentioned Wilder. I mentioned Dunn. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Barber.
James Wilder is very interesting. He played on some dreadful teams, but he produced.
Here's why I would put Hardy Nickerson in, Ira. Aside from five Pro Bowls here in Tampa with different coaching staffs, all the those guys from that Super Bowl team, who guys you've spent a lot of time with over the years, Brooks, Sapp, Lynch, Barber, everyone you've talked to, everybody goes back to Hardy Nickerson. As this was the guy who changed the culture.
I think he was the bridge guy between Weiss
yes. mm-hmm.
And Dungy yeah. and Gruden. He mm-hmm. was that guy.
Yeah.
He did help, in large extent, change the culture.
Very
in
much
Tampa.
So. Mm-hmm.
Five-time Pro Bowler here in Tampa, made an all-pro team, covered multiple regimes, and everybody points to him as the mentor.
But it wasn't until Dungy arrived that they started winning.
Absolutely, but Nickerson was here, 96, 97, 98, 99.
He was also there in 93.
Was he not a broadcaster for two seasons or one season?
I don't remember.
Yeah, he was a broadcaster with the Bucks.
Yeah, he was a broadcaster with the Bucks and then quit to go
Carolina,
coach
right?
with Lovie. No, he coached in Chicago for 1 year.
Okay. With the Bears. Carolina, the coach. Okay.
No, but I think he's so deserving mainly because, one, he was a fantastic player, and two, all those guys point to Hardy. So, I mean, you know, if we're going to put Paul
Gruber. And he was a captain.
He was a captain. If we're going to put Paul Gruber, he was the captain and the focal mentor of that iconic defense you talk about. If we're going to put Paul Gruber in, Hardy Nickerson, if you're choosing sides in Bucks history, you want Hardy Nickerson or Paul Gruber?
Now, Paul Gruber was selected properly, but mm-hmm. he was selected before Leroy Selman had any company in the Hall.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
Leroy Selman's got a lot of company in the Hall.
Mm-hmm.
If you count Dungy, that's three.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Lynch and Barber, mm-hmm. you know, we'll see if I'm lucky.
And you're real lucky. You'll be yeah. Rice, too. But yeah. But you're starting to go where I was going. It was good timing for Gruber, excuse me, because Brooks was still playing then. Sapp might have been with the Raiders. I'm not sure. But there was that gap there. You know, you couldn't put current day players in the ring. That's not going to fly. So, but I agree with what Steve said. Gruber was good. He was worthy. No question. But if he goes in there, you would have to look at Nickerson. You know, I think you'd have to look at Wilder as well. Wilder is an interesting choice. I can't argue against that.
He's all they had on offense.
That's all they had. Yeah.
All they had. Now, Steve,
and other teams knew it too. And he produced.
One more point I want to make. And judging from what you guys have already said, you're not going to agree with me.
Uh-oh.
But I was surprised and I was disappointed that the Bucks didn't add Dungy to last year's things to go along with Lynch when they already were on record saying we can honor two guys in the same year, which they did.
That's a little bit of a surprise, yeah.
A little bit of a surprise, Steve, because the year that Dungy goes into the Hall, they had time to add a second game. I was a little bit surprised.
Here's some irony for you.
That they didn't do that.
Here's some irony for it. Now, when they do that, the Ring of Honor is usually on a Monday night game, right?
Yeah, national televised game. Yeah.
You know, you and I were sparring about Dungy and Gruden. Well, on Monday Night Football, who's up in the broadcast booth?
Mr. Gruden.
You think that he might be able, you know, he's got an axe to grind with the Glazers. It still irks him. He got fired. You think he would have maybe become a loose cannon? Like, well, gee, I'm surprised they didn't honor the coach that won a Super Bowl.
He would say that privately.
You know he'd say it privately. Yeah.
Hey, guys, one more aspect to this, which I think is funny. You know, in lieu of the way that the Bucs season turned out is, you know, I was down on the field for that Thursday night game against Atlanta. I believe they rang up 43 points, Steve.
Yeah.
That was the halftime for John Lynch.
And you're talking about this season, 2016.
And there's Brooks, and Thursday there's Sapp, and there's Lynch. And I'm hanging around these guys before they go out on the field. We're in the tunnel. And they're looking up at the monitor. And you know, Ryan's doing whatever he wants. Julio Jones, whatever he wants.
Scrimmage for them.
Yeah. And I'm watching this. And like one guy's turning to the other and goes, I can't look at this anymore. They were embarrassed. And of course, the Bucs were on their way to being 3-5. Right, mm-hmm. gentlemen? Mm-hmm. That was the coffin. Mm-hmm. The coffin nailed at 3-5. Now, nobody knew that after the bye week, they were going to turn that thing around.
Yeah, the Bears were after the bye week, right?
I believe that's right.
And then was the next game in Seattle? No, Kansas City. Which they won.
And then Kansas City and Seattle.
And then
back
in Sapp's own words, they choked out Russell Wilson. Sapp's words, not mine.
Great words. But, Steve, that night was an embarrassment, you know, with all the fanfare around John Lynch. Yeah. And the Bucs didn't show up that night.
Yeah, it was gruesome, and it was something we all came to get used to.
I apologize, Ira. I didn't get to read your column yet this morning. I've been busy doing
things. That's all right, Lee.
Here's a real dark horse candidate. Here's a real out of the box thinking. For Ring of Honor.
No, Lee. Bradley McDougal will not be considered.
Not Bradley, no. Right. But a guy who's synonymous with the Bucks for decades. Gene Deckerhoff.
Interesting. Very out of the box, Steve. Very out of the box.
And there are announcers that go into teams Ring
Even
of
Fame. Even Dungy can't complain about losing out to an announcer, Steve.
It's too early for Gene. Too early for Gene.
How long has he been doing games? 20 years?
Is Chris Myers far behind over there?
How long has Deckerhoff been doing games?
Deckerhoff's been doing games.
A long time, right?
Just to wrap this up with a bow, there have been plenty of games with these Ring of Honors that weren't night games just because the Bucks weren't playing a lot of night games.
That's right.
There were... some day efforts for sure.
You
would
think they'd get a couple next year, Steve. You would think.
And Floro says they will.
They'll get at least a few for sure. But you could do the Ring of Honor any day. I don't think it means anything. Night, day, whatever. The Glazers are just trying to sell tickets, to tie it around
Speaking
nicely.
Of televised games, Steve. I know this is not on our docket here, but you might have a thought or two. I know Lee would. I see people are starting to talk about Hard Knocks, Lee.
Mm.
From a Buck perspective, I guess there's a select number of teams,
8, I think,
that are available. Mm-hmm. I'm old school, Steve. My initial reaction is, we don't need this. Who needs this?
The Glazers?
The Glazers, perhaps. What do you boys think about it? First reaction.
Well, two things, Ira. Two things. First, I think it would be, just to finish what I was going to say, Gruden and Dungy together, that's the put them in together. I think that would be fantastic. Everybody can celebrate.
Separate games?
No, same game.
Wow.
Throw them in together. Throw them in together. Honor them. These are our... Iconic coaches of the Super Bowl era, period. Put them in together. Nobody has to put one over another. They can have their jokes between whose team or
That's
whatever.
That's politically correct, isn't it?
I think it would be fantastic and a lot of fun.
So Dungy goes to the podium first, goes alphabetical order, and then there you go. All right.
And Gruden walks up and says, well, Tony, I always take over for you.
I always follow you and improve.
There I always go. Finish things up.
Walks in with that trophy, hang.
As far as Hard Knocks.
Hard Knocks. I got no problem with it at all. Lee's written this. You could Google Hard Knocks in the Bucks. Lee gave his take, and I know he talked to some people associated with Hard Knocks and previous teams. I get the old school, Ira, but I don't think it's really a big deal in today's culture to have a bunch of cameras around and then it's on TV. Big deal. If anything else, it can help your team mature because if you're on Hard Knocks, if you say the wrong thing, you're going to pay the price.
Something tells me the Kemper finds a way to get on TV.
No, I don't want
somewhere
that.
During that season.
I don't
Steve,
want
am I
that.
Wrong?
I don't want that.
Somehow he ends up talking to a cheerleader in the background, and he's haranguing How do you like that one? He's haranguing a cheerleader.
That's one step above a restraining order.
In deep background, in the foreground, you got Cutter talking.
Well, I could
then somebody says, well, what the hell's the Kemper doing back
I could
there?
See Cutter in a meeting room with the Hard Knocks camera on him saying, what the F is with the media today? Those idiots of Joe Buck's fan bugging the crap out of me with these line of questioning.
Absolutely.
I'll say this real quick. Well, first off, about the cheerleader, I try to do that all the time. It doesn't have to be Hard Knocks. No, I don't want to be on TV. I've got a stomach and a face for radio.
I think, but Steve, I think the allure from a Hard Knocks perspective is Jameis Winston.
No question.
That's clearly the allure.
No question.
As far as the Bucks are concerned.
I'll say this about Hard Knocks. During the Shrine practices, I got the coaches from all over there, and I got to talk to a couple coaches, one of which had gone through multiple Hard Knocks with different teams. He said after the second day, you don't even notice it. And like I told Dumig is like you. He's old school. He doesn't want to see it. He claims Steve Dumig, is a big dog in WDAE 620. He claims he's never seen an episode of Hard Knocks, which known as a hardcore sports addict that Steve is, I find it difficult to believe. But, okay, Steve's never conned me before. Steve's against it. But I told Steve, and Steve did agree with him, a distraction in the middle of August, unless you've got a garbage team and you're looking for excuses, a distraction in August should have no bearing whatsoever in December.
Buck's got a pretty tight room, Steve. We're in there all the time during the season.
I'll say this, and we'll finish up on this with the Hard Knocks. The X factor is once you're on Hard Knocks, you don't know what sort of wrinkle HBO might be like, oh, we have a new secret such-and-such cam that we didn't tell anybody about, or we have a shoe cam, or you never know what's going to happen. So there is that element of something could go wrong.
Well,
like capturing Cutter, who's very candid, saying something negative about a player behind closed doors that gets out there that he didn't want out there.
Maybe they're watching film session. Somebody says something.
Cutter's gone through Hard Knocks a couple times already.
Right. But Cutter's been through it. Whatever. I don't think it's a big deal. It's not going to lose you the playoff game.
I agree.
They could catch a guy saying something off the cuff, but as far as novel technical advances or whatever, like you said, shoe cam or whatever, all that's approved before. I mean, remember, NFL Films produces this. NFL Films is never going to put the NFL in a bad light.
Would it put any fannies in seats? Because one thing we know won't put fannies in seats is a price increase, and we've already seen that.
That's a nice segue.
Hard Knocks can definitely help.
Nice job, thank you, baby.
Hard Knocks can definitely help, sure, because it's going to bring in more casual fans. And if you can get people with their eyes on the Bucks on TV and it's good television, and it's August 15th, they're more likely to get out there in September and October.
And they feel they know the players a little better, right,
yeah,
Steve?
Yeah, and there's an issue. I think as much as the Bucks try to get people knowing the players, I don't think they do a great job with that. Really,
it's a work in progress, Steve, because we know what it was like during the glory days. The community felt very, very close to those players.
Because the players were close to the community. And I understand why the Bucks do this, I guess the NFL in general. There's security issues. They try to keep a fence, and I understand that. But like you said, Lynch was involved in the community. Dungy clearly was. Now that's why you put him in the Hall of Fame. I sort of get you because All-Star was a bar hopper. I mean, you can go to St. Petersburg about any weekday night when he was a young guy, and there he was in the bars like a regular guy. So they were very
drinking seven up,
seven up, and something else that I won't talk about. Herm Edwards. Coach, he was really, I mean, it was nothing. I remember back when I was with the Tribune, those days they had me doing high school games on Friday night. It was nothing to go to a high school game and see Bucks players there. It was nothing. They're like a regular person. I remember covering some Clearwater Central Catholic games. It was, you knew you were going to see a Bucks player there. It was work done. I think Herb Edwards' kid was playing, Marcus Edwards was playing for Clearwater Central Catholic at the time. You expected to see Bucks players there. Sapp was there a couple times. Brooks was there. Dunn was there. Reedell Anthony was there. So, I mean, these guys were out and about in the community. It sort of reminds me, I know I'm getting off the beaten track here, sort of reminds me of the reaction Bucks fans had when Jameis Winston was a rookie. He was leaving a game. I can't remember who they lost to. He still had his suit on. You know, he always wore a suit to the press conference. He stopped at Publix on his way home, just like any one of us would on the way home from work. Stopped at Publix, and he created a big scene. He didn't want to create a scene, but he was stopping at Publix because he had to pick something up because his mom was...
Did he stay out of the seafood department?
He stayed out of the seafood department, and Facebook went nuts because people were like, oh, my God, Jameis Winston's in Publix, and they're having pictures taken with him and stuff. Very similar. He was part of the community.
He's like you. I'm always looking for those BOGOs of the week and...
coupons.
Some chicken wings.
Now, Steve, you talked about a potential bump in attendance from Hard Knocks. But
we'll go right to
we
it.
We haven't talked about this bump in prices.
Yeah, I know you wanted to talk about it, Ira. Look, Glazers raised ticket prices. The information appeared on the weekend. They sort of put it out during a nice quiet time.
Usually a Friday night, Lee, when they used to do it. It used to be, and they haven't done it often. Recently.
No, they have not.
But they used to sneak it in about Friday night about 8 o'clock.
Well, I mean, they raised ticket prices significantly last year, and then now there's another increase for a percentage of fans. The marketing campaign started on a weekend, and the Tampa Bay Times wrote about it. You know, Bucks didn't really make much of it. It's price goes up. For most people, it's about $5 a game, including the Joe Bag of Donuts fans upstairs.
Steve, to be fair. And to put it in overall perspective.
Please do.
Among NFL teams, it's still one of the more affordable tickets.
Very much
to
so.
To be fair.
Did you see San Diego's ticket prices?
Ooh. But it is 2 years in a row, Steve.
I'm sorry. Los Angeles Chargers.
That's right. Oof. Steve, it is 2 years in a row, and it's significant.
So what do you think? You like it? You don't like it? You don't care? You think it's meaningless?
I think if they went 4-12, I don't think it happens.
I agree.
Don't think it happens. But there's a buzz around town. I don't think it's enough of a bump that's going to cause people to drop it in hordes, season ticket holders. I think there's a lot of interest in this team right now. But interest always lags behind the standings. There's always a lag.
Sure, I agree. So
there's still a lot of fans, maybe predominant number. And you always talk about the casual fans, Steve. I think that's important. Who say, I'm not convinced yet. And you know what? Lee, to be honest, based on Buck history, putting back-to-back winning seasons, I don't blame them.
Yeah, recent history. Yeah, I agree with you. They're very much in a show-me mood. They want to believe. They really want to believe, but you got to give them a reason to believe. And so, you know, Cutter's giving people some hors d'oeuvres, shall we say.
And I think, Steve, it's important that the Bucks continue to enhance the game day experience. Mm-hmm. Very, very important. The Bucks certainly not alone in this. It's a big, big issue for the NFL, Steve. Mostly because football televises so well. Let's be honest.
With HD,
and everybody's got the big TV, Steve, and you don't have to deal with the parking and the concessions. And you got to give a very good reason for people to come out and watch it in person. The scoreboard enhancements, I thought, were significant.
Very much
and
so. They were
Brian
good.
Ford is not, you know, says that's only the beginning. So I think that's important.
Well, I know Jerry Jones was on record when they were building the new Cowboy stadiums. I think this is a direct quote. If not, it's a good paraphrase. You got to get people a reason to get off the couch.
No question about that.
And that's why he built all the bells and whistles in the stadium.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a I'm going to use a strong word here. I think it's a bit of a fabricated issue for the NFL. It's not that hard to do some exciting things to get fans out to the game. Not every team wants to do it. They don't all want to make the investment, but there's not some sort of attendance crisis across the NFL. The teams who want to invest more in the fan experience, they reap the rewards from it. You know, you don't see the Bucks had struggling attendance for years, or for a good chunk of years, 5, 6, 7 years
ago. And still turned a nice profit.
Well, it's not that. Did you see post-game concerts like the Rays do and other gimmicks? No, it's just like, hey, we're going to be blacked out, or hey, you know.
Because the TV money keeps rolling in, Lee.
That's exactly right.
That's what it's all about.
Right. So that's why I'm saying it's a fabricated issue. Baseball, which still relies so much on in-stadium revenue because you have 2 million fans showing up.
But they're flush with cash in baseball.
They are. But you take a baseball team with 2 million fans showing up to the park, a good football team has 600,000 fans showing up. So it's a bigger piece of their revenue pie. The football, I mean, they want the fans there. There's a lot of
for TV
money,
purposes.
Do you
TV
think this bump it. will cause a significant number of season ticket holders to drop?
No, you'll have your handful of pissed off people and, you know, squawking and all this other stuff, but I don't think so at all. And especially since the Bucks are under the salary cap, they're going to spend in free agency at least a chunk. So that'll satisfy the people who think, oh, the Bucks aren't spending. And
putting it all in their pocket.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly right. I was going to say the same thing. The fans, the handful of fans that'll be hacked off, that they'll lose, they should be able to gain with the free agent signings, the draft picks, the potential of a playoff run. I think they'll gain just as many as they lose, may even gain a little bit more.
All right, Ira.
By the way, am I the only guy that misses Fan Fest? I used to go to Fan Fest all the time.
Yeah, I thought Fan Fest was a great idea.
I don't know why they don't do it anymore.
I think people had a good time.
We always get questions about when's Fan Fest. Well, it hasn't been.
People showed up.
I thought they sold a lot of tickets.
Well, it was free. FanFest
no,
was
no,
free.
No. I mean,
they had season ticket sales.
Yeah, season ticket sales.
I mean, look, you can mingle with players and get in the stadium and look around. I think with the improvements to the stadium, I think a lot of people who haven't been to a game or would love to just look around and just get out
see the suites, the concourses.
Yeah, see some fireworks, get some autographs. I liked when they had the old timers in the tunnels. You know, you could get Batman Wood's autograph if you were a Batman Wood kind of guy.
There's a reason why every baseball team has something like that.
We're going to have to chat that up with some Buck people, Lee.
Phoenix?
We got a little clout. Fitz got some clout.
Ira, you get on that. That's your new project, FanFest. All right, now look, your podcast, Ira, is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. And the Cadillac of tight ends in this draft is O.J. Howard, the big beast from Alabama, definitely a talented, big-bodied tight end. And look, so many teams are looking for this guy after what Tony Gonzalez did to the NFL and Jimmy Graham and others. They're looking for that home run threat, and everybody's obsessed with, New England and their two tight end sets. And Bill Belichick, studying college offenses and going with two tight ends and Gronk and Hernandez and whatever. A lot of people, a lot of fans, big time, are obsessed with O.J. Howard as a guy the Bucs should pick because he's a weapon. And Lee's written many times that, O.J. Howard, that's very nice. No knock on the player, but Cameron Brate led the NFL in touchdown catches. So it doesn't mean you can't have two tight ends on the field, but how much more production do you think you're going to get out of the tight end spot, and why would you want to pull some snaps or some red zone targets from Mr. Brate? So that's sort of the Lee/Joe Bucks fan view. What's your view on Mr. Howard and potentially drafting him?
I look at it very simply. This guy better be Ozzie Newsome. Speaking of Alabama and tight ends.
Yep, there you go.
If the guy's Ozzie Newsome, I want him.
There you go.
And I'll use two tight ends. Hate to agree with the Kemper. Hate to agree with him. Is anybody listed tight end among the great positions of need for this football
team? I have not seen anyone outside of a few commenters on Joe Bucks fan.
Maybe a year ago when people were worried about ASJ and they didn't know who Cameron Brate was.
Yeah.
The guy came in and caught eight touchdowns.
There you go. I wrote this last week on JoeBucksFan.com. Here ASJ was second round pick, had all the talent in the world. AS Jackwagon. And guess what? The guy, the scrub from Harvard, leading the league in touchdowns, not AS Jackwagon.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm not totally sold on Howard as an impact player. Either.
Howard could be an impact player, but he's not even close to a need. Now, against, like Steve says, there's these people, a double tight end formation. Well, if you're going to have a double tight end formation, you better have a freaking running back. Guess what? Bucks don't have one. Bucks need a wide receiver. And, they need a running back. And, by the way, they have a tight end
already. This argument carries a lot more water before Cameron Brate emerged as a legitimate tight end.
Agreed.
A lot more.
So, Ira, you don't draft him. If he's there for you at 18, you only draft him if you think he's Ozzie Newsome. Is this what you're saying?
If you think he's Ozzie Newsome, you take him at 18. And if he's sitting there in the second round, you take him. But I'm not taking him. I'm not using my first draft pick on a guy who, in my opinion, is a luxury. Mm-hmm. And questionable whether he's going to be an impact tight end. I don't see this fanfare over.
Well, that's just it. And like I said, people are taking this the wrong way. I'm not being negative about O.J. Howard. He could be the next Ozzie Newsome. But you know what? He's also unproven in the NFL. Bucks have a proven guy. Again, I repeat. Led the NFL in touchdowns for tight ends.
Well, the mindset, Ira, just to sort of represent the other side is, look, the Bucs are running two tight ends all the time. The guy who leads the team in snaps at tight end was Luke Stocker. He's the guy getting most of the snaps. Howard allegedly is a guy who can block and is the complete tight end.
How'd that offense do last year?
Well, it was the same way 2 years ago.
2 years ago they had a running back.
No, I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying that the argument is the Bucs have two tight ends on the field, so why not get more versatile and diverse and all this other stuff? But I think what gets lost is Dirk Koetter brings in a lot of this third tight end, jumbo lineman. He does all this stuff because he doesn't have the weapons he had in Atlanta to spread them out.
Yeah, didn't have Julio Jones.
He didn't have. So this is not the offense Koetter really wants to run. He wants to put Julio Jones and Roddy White out there, and he got a load out of Devin Hester when he was their number three, and he wants to spread it out. and run a more traditional pro set. He's a pass first. He likes to run the ball, don't get me wrong, but he's a passing three wide, four wide guy. The Bucs can't do that, so Cutter's adjusted. He's not a two tight end guy. It's just
I don't see
not
a two tight end revolution in the National Football League. By the way, the Patriots just won it without Gronkowski. They didn't even have Gronkowski.
Not only that, and they had a 1,000-yard run where the guy led the league in touchdowns. Bunt.
That's unbelievable to me.
Yeah, that's what I mean. If you're going to have a double tight end formation, you better have a running back, or guess what? Your offense is going to be like the Bucs were last year.
Oh, good point, though, Steve. It's not the ideal.
Yeah, it's not what Cutter wants to do.
It's not ideal for Cutter. No.
And I think the last piece of that is, I think it's escaping me now, so I'll just let it go. You know, sometimes the brain you get old, it just flies out of your head.
I'm not buying the O.J. Howard argument. I'm not using my first-round pick on
it. And again, that's not a knock on Howard in any way. It's just not a fit. Not a need, not a fit.
Yeah, it's just not...
Unless you feel he's clearly the best value. Clearly the best value when you make that pick.
Well, you know
clearly.
What? Jason Light picked ASJ because he said they're on the board. He was so far head and shoulders above everybody else that they had to take him.
They also had a need at that time, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of elements to that decision to put a guy, to add a guy like Howard when you have Brait. And frankly, the regime believes so deeply in Adam Humphries. If you're going to go run a bunch of two tight ends, you're basically neutering Humphries. And they, I don't think they want to do that.
And the organization is big on
Humphries. Right. They believe so much in him that it doesn't make sense for the organization. And it's just, I don't know.
You know, it's a flavor of the month right now, Howard. It'll pass in a week or two.
That's a good point.
Because if he is that tight, he is the ASJ. You could make the argument, well, last year the goal was to have ASJ revive himself and they'd have Brait and whatever, but it's a bad argument and it's not what the Bucs need right now. I think we're all in agreement on that. Ira, let me turn it over to Lee for a second. Just for the sense of when this podcast pops, he'll be in Indianapolis at the Combine. And what's interesting, Ira, the NFL scouting combine in Indy, you know, Joe Bucs fans up there doing our thing. And when I say doing our thing, it's because the NFL has this god-awful, ridiculous policy of not letting the media watch the combine. You can attend the combine, but you can't watch what's happening on the field, except for a very select handful of reporters to, like, witness the event as if it's a presidential historical
audience.
Moment or something.
For like 15 minutes.
So, yeah. So if you attend the combine as one of the 1,000-plus media members, keep in mind there's 70,000 seats in the Lucas Dome. They could have everybody sit and watch at the upper level.
The Kemper could have his own section.
Yeah, exactly. So, but they don't let you watch. They don't let you watch the combine. I don't think fans realize that. You can't watch. You can fly there, spend all this money, but you can't watch the combine. You can watch it on TV with the rest of the schlubs, which is bizarre.
Yeah, they have monitors all over the place.
Not only should the media watch it, they should let fans in, Lee.
Well,
they can charge them.
This year they're starting to.
Yeah, I think this year is the first year.
And they're also going to let fans in on the press conferences. I don't know how they're going to work that.
But I don't know about that.
They'll have them in their ear. They'll get like a media day where they get these boxes
handheld,
and channels. They can tune in to what they want to listen to. But the point is, when Joe Bucs fans up there, it's all about talking to the prospects. It's all about talking to all the movers and shakers in the NFL in one spot, all under one roof. Mm-hmm. And
we couldn't have anybody better up there than Mr. DeKemper.
Lee can talk about his strategy, maybe.
He covers the waterfront, and Lee's going to go through those. He's going to go through those potential rookies for the Bucs, and he's going to want to know what they talked about with the Bucs. And Lee, I'm just glad that you're going to be up there. I've been to several combines. I want you to take it easy at St. Elmo's. I know you will. You're a veteran.
I'm up there to work, not to drink.
You're up there to work.
That won't mean I won't have beer, but
Steve, I don't know anybody that's going to have better coverage in the Bay Area than Joe Bucs fans.
Well, thank you, sir. The combine has changed, obviously, since you covered it back when Sammy Ball was slinging. It's so cool that the NFL spoon-feeds you all these guys, every general manager, virtually every coach. Belichick only talks once every couple of years. Tomlin refuses to talk. And other than that, almost every coach talks. Every GM talks.
And the top prospects, right?
Beyond that. I mean, what they do is the very top prospects, they set them up with podiums. And it's like a real press conference. And the lesser-known guys, They put him at a table. And you got 10 minutes. You just walk right up to him, sit right next to him. And this is my strategy with the combine. I've done this ever since I started going up there. Now, a lot of fans, and I'm with a lot of fans, they want to know, have the Bucks spoken with X player? Generally, the Bucks have spoken with everybody. That doesn't intrigue me. What does intrigue me, if the Bucks have spoken to a prospect multiple times. If you speak to a guy multiple times, you're not going to waste your time. If you're not interested in him, you're going
to just due diligence.
Yes, yeah. And 2 years ago, and this might get fans' rocks off because of who it is, but they are bringing offensive linemen in, and of course the NFL announces, okay, so-and-so at table three, so-and-so at table four, Donovan Smith, Penn State, left tackle at table five. So I sat next to him, table five, and Donovan had the Bucks talk to you. Oh, a bunch of times. Antenna goes up right away. Bunch of times. Many times. That's the exact quote. Many times. My antenna goes up right away. You wouldn't talk to a guy many times if he's not whittled down to your final 20 or 30 or whatever. Sure enough, the Bucks picked him at second. And so when a guy says the Bucks have spoken with me two or three times, I make a note. Okay, the Bucks have spoken with him multiple times. So that's what I do with prospects. If a guy says, I talked to him once a couple months ago, I kind of like, oh, okay, I might ask him a question or two and be gone. But I'm looking. What I try to do is I try to target positions where the Bucks are going to pick. Like when Donovan Smith was being drafted, they already cut Anthony Collins. You know, it's pretty clear they're going after offensive linemen. So I went down. They're not going to pick offensive line first round. That was James, of course. But they're going to go offensive line second, third, fourth. So I started looking at various lists where they have prospect rankings, and I tried to figure out, okay, this guy's going to be drafted second round, third round, fourth round. And I went from there. And that's how I came up with Donovan Smith. It was sort of luck of the draw. Okay, people think he's going to be a third-round pick. That's where I thought the Bucks would pick an offensive lineman. Talk to him. Oh, yeah, many times they've talked to me. Boom. So that's kind of my strategy.
What day can Joe Buck fan readers expect to see comments from Cutter and Light?
Wednesday. Wednesday is the first day of the combine. Now, when I say first day of the combine, I refer to the first day combine for the media. Combine runs longer. Combine is a TV show. The TV show that fans watch, I have zero interest in. I don't give a damn what a 40 is. I don't care if the damn guy can connect with the receiver who's unguarded with no shoulder pad. I don't give a damn. That's Underwear Olympics. That's not just Underwear Olympics. It's underwear football and glorified indoor track practice. I don't care about any of that. What I'm up there for is talking.
You have shown an interest in lingerie football. In past years.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I understand that.
but I'm going up there for information. That's why I'm going up there. And I like I said, I don't care anything about, you know, the underwear football.
So Wednesday you get the Buck brain trust.
Well, yeah, somebody will talk, Ira. Either way.
As soon as they talk, that's when they'll start seeing the copy flowing from Cutter or from Light or whomever.
Yeah, Lee will catch up to. I mean, and
every day
who
the
knows
combine.
Who he's going to catch up to. Might be Mike Smith somewhere. Who knows? I mean, the Bucks whole brass comes up there to be a big part of the interview process to talk to these guys. And
Lee's first question, obviously, will be who's going in the Ring of Honor, Isbitz?
I think you're going to say, where's the next
that's
cheerleader?
That's an obvious first question.
I hope Lee catches O.J. Howard, who we were just talking about, and says those questions. Have the Bucks been drilling you down? And Lee, maybe you could even throw in hit him with a Cameron Brate question. Say, hey, Mr. Howard, what did you learn watching the NFL's tight end touchdown leader last year? It'd be interesting to see if he says, I don't know who Cameron Brate is. That would be interesting.
Oh, that'd be good. I'm sure Mr. Dalvin Cook will be at the podium.
And right. I plan to ask him a couple questions. Last year at the Combine, I got one of my favorite quotes of all times from Vernon Hargraves. It was him, and the name escapes me, cornerback from Clemson, who I thought would have gone higher. He got drafted by Minnesota in the second round. I can't think of the guy's name, but anyway, both Florida guys, both short cornerbacks, and I had the same question for both. Hargraves obviously being 5'10", I asked him, I said, has anybody, you know, can you speak to that? You know, people say you're too short to play corner. Vernon Hargraves said, if you can ball, you can ball. I love that quote. I love that. So that was my direct question with him, and that was a direct answer. If you can ball, you can ball. And I loved it.
All right, Ira, a couple of rapid-fire things real quick. You know, hopefully when this podcast posts, we won't have an answer to this, but so let's keep it short, and just in case something changed. But, you know, you're an NFL writer, you're an NFL sage, Hall of Fame voter. You covered the whole NFL from all over the globe for the Tampa Tribune. Did you go to Tokyo years ago?
I did not. Mr. Cummings made that trip. And he loves to tell that story because I believe it was the year after the Bucks won the Super Bowl. Am I correct?
Yes.
And the first media gathering with the Bucks and the local media in Tokyo. Roy asked Sapp a question, and Sapp said, not talking to you, Roy. Not talking to you.
Hey, come all the way
so
to Tokyo.
It crossed the international boundary. Unbelievable.
But I bring this up, Ira. Kirk Cousins, is there any way in your mind, and maybe you can call your friend Bruce Allen. Yeah, I think he owes you one.
Bruce Allen called me last month.
That's what I'm saying. I think he owes you one. Is there any way in your mind that the Redskins don't bring back Kirk Cousins, or that they sign him and trade him, which would shake up the whole NFL, essentially destroy Jay Gruden's coaching tenure, because the guy, you know, goes 9-7 2 years in a row. If you trade his quarterback or don't re-sign his quarterback who he wants, you've basically neutered the head coach. And then, of course, for Bucs fans, Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson, they're not going to re-sign in Washington if they get rid of the quarterback. So is there any way that this happens, that Cousins isn't back there? What are you sniffing?
I think it's just a question of how much Cousins is going to make. Now, he didn't finish the season the way he should have.
Yeah,
you got to beat the Giants.
He had a clunker in the last game, didn't he?
You got to beat the Giants when the Giants didn't have a lot to play.
Especially when your playoff is riding on it.
But having said that, they don't have a lot of options. Steve, they might have Colt McCoy back there. I don't know. Behind him?
Yep.
This is not a team that's rebuilding, Lee. They're not rebuilding. They're a pretty good team.
Yeah.
But I think Isbitz is exactly right. You got to show your head coach some respect, because your head coach has been doing a nice job, Lee. Well, I got nothing wrong with what Jay Gruden's doing in Washington.
Now, there's some word out of Washington that apparently Jay Gruden thinks McCoy could step right in.
I don't believe that. I think Isbitz is
tough
right
for debate.
In that he's got a lot invested in Cousins. He's a Cousins guy.
Cousins has worked for him.
I think Cousins has worked for him, albeit he didn't finish the season very strongly, Steve. And if that's the hang-up, I think the Redskins will get over it, and he'll be a Redskin.
Steve, I hope it'll be this quick. I don't think I will. Great story. I didn't think it was worthy of a post on JoeBucksFan.com, because I didn't think it was fair, because I'm not sure that Bill Polling was just specifically talking about Mike Glennon. But Bill Polling was on Sirius NFL Radio last night with Alex Marvez, a friend of ours. Alex Marvez, great guy. And the subject about quarterbacks and how there's a dearth of quarterbacks. You don't have one, you're screwed. And there's not going to be any quarterbacks out there free agency, save for maybe Kirk Cousins that you may want. And Alex Marvez said, well, you know, there's Mike Glennon, and Bill Polian cut him off. He goes, whoa, 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 wait a minute. These names you're going to talk about here, who are they? And I don't know if that was a direct shot at Glennon or not. But then Alex Marvez said, well, you know, there's also Fitzpatrick and Polian. We know what he is. And then he said, Brian Hoyer, yeah, we know what he is. And he said, well, there's Geno Smith. Yeah, we know what he is. Every time he plays poorly. Now, he didn't specifically say anything about Glennon.
Sure.
But I just thought it was interesting that Marvez says Mike Glennon and Bill Polian. Bill Polian doesn't say too many negative things.
You're right.
And immediately you're like, whoa, 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 wait a minute.
That goes to Steve's point, and he said it many times, and it's hard to argue it, that Mike Glennon should not be particularly enticing on the free agent market. But, Steve, when you think about Lee's premise, which is hard to argue with, there's not 32 good quarterbacks out there in the National Football League.
Yeah, and I think it's just this simple. Every team is going to prefer to draft a guy and hope to hit the lottery than go after a stiff, try to turn him into a guy who's going to win you a Super Bowl. It's you're better off developing the young guy, and he's a lot cheaper too. You're going to have to pay Glennon at least solid backup money. Which the market was set by Chase Daniel, and the Eagles gave him $7 million to back up Bradford. Now Bradford's not even there.
I'm starting to. Are you guys seeing these rumors about Tony Romo to the Chiefs? Have you guys hearing that?
I've heard that.
You know, that would be turning the back on Alex Smith, who's got a pretty good record.
But he can't
get him past a certain point in the playoffs.
That's what I heard this morning. This guy works with Florida. What's a stats guy or something like that? He said, Alex Smith will only get you so far. Well, you know what? He got the two NFC Championship games, did he not? One in overtime. So I think the ridicule Alex Smith is a little, you know, he's not Trent Dilfer. Let's not get carried away.
Romo is a wild card out there, Steve.
He's a wild card, but I think the upside for the Chiefs is they could get something for Alex Smith. You could trade Alex Smith and get something back. So if they look at, well, we can sign a free agent, a wild card that we think it might be better, and we can get picks back for Alex Smith, that's not a bad deal.
Would you take a flyer on Colin Kaepernick?
No.
If you were another team? or is he a pariah?
You got a defined flyer, Calvin. What is this? Flyer. What is that?
Get him at a cheap price. Bring him in. Let him compete.
I think it depends where.
It depends on your offense.
I think, yes, but more than that.
He's not oldly.
Well, here's what I'm getting at. And a lot of fans, specifically this Joe Mixon, you know, they're looking at strictly from an X's and O's standpoint. They're not realizing the corporate money that will be shut down if you draft a guy like that. Kaepernick, well, Mike Evans. Look what happened with Mike Evans in the flag issue. You think Kaepernick come here as a backup? They won't touch him.
I didn't say to the Bucs.
Well, for example.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
He couldn't go to a Midwestern city. He couldn't go to Atlanta. He couldn't come here. San Francisco, sure. That's the Soviet Socialist Republic.
Could he go
there.
To New York?
Probably can go to New York. Certain markets he would be. He wouldn't be able to walk the streets.
I was going
to
say he's a decent option for the Jets. And you look at what Kaepernick actually did last year. I think he only threw four picks.
I think you're right.
He had a very efficient season within a bad team. But he wasn't a garbage quarterback by any stretch last year. And he's still young. And he could do a lot. It depends on the offense. But, yeah, flyer, sure. Buffalo, maybe. I don't know. Let me throw this at you, Ira, before we wrap up. You know, Bucs fans are just all hot in the pants for free agency right now. Nobody can take it anymore. It's just insanity, and especially knowing that Combine news is coming where we might get some hints. People are all fired up.
Can you imagine how people are going to parse DeKemper's reports out of Indianapolis, the quotes from Cutter, the quotes from Light? You're going to have to be very careful, Lee, because it's going to be open to interpretation.
Yes, it
will. People are going to be looking at nuance.
Ira, I'm the number one guy who's going to be parsing them. What are you talking about, people?
Have you ever heard the word nuance and Lee DeKemper in the same sentence?
Oh, of course. He's very nuanced in his...
All right, what's the way I slip into a bar stool?
You know, you keep saying over and over again, you would take Dalvin Cook if he's there. Bucks desperate for a running game. Doug Martin, persona non grata. Jaquiz Smith, we all agree, is not a number one running back. So the Bucks are basically without a running back right now. Why? Why, Ira? Why? Is it just because he plays in Oakland that people are not hot in the pants around here for Latavius Murray? That's a good running back.
Opinions are split about Murray. His average is not very good. And the Raiders have a good offensive line.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm.
They do have a good offensive line, led by former Buck Donald Penn.
Thank you, Lovey.
Who's on TV all the time and radio. He's everywhere. You know, I wouldn't close the door on Murray, but I don't think he would raise a lot of – I don't think he's exciting for Buck fans.
Dynamic?
I don't think it's a sexy move.
Well, you know what? You talk – you do as much – probably more so than I do, I'm sure. People within the Bucs organization, when it comes to offensive players, like skill position players, they love to throw the word dynamic out. He's not dynamic. He is dynamic. They love that word.
Cook is dynamic.
Yes, Cook is dynamic. But, they throw that word a lot about prospects and skill position
Murray
players.
Murray might
dynamic.
Be the best of the bunch, Steve, in free agency, but that means it's more of a reflection about the bunch.
But this is what I'm asking you is, what's wrong with the best of the bunch? I mean, I'm saying the guy is a 1,000-yard rusher. He's versatile. There's no real complaints about Murray. We need a legit back. He's a legitimate number one running back. It's pretty low mileage. He's young. He's looking for a payday. Why are we not like
all? Why are the Raiders?
Why are we not crazy?
Well, it always crosses my mind. If you get X player, well, why doesn't his team want him?
Well, he might end up going back there. We don't know. But my question is, why aren't Bucs fans interested in this guy? Are we that blinded by the draft?
I think two reasons. One, you know, we live in Florida. It's SEC state. People see Fournette all the time.
They think Cook's going to be there at 19.
Yeah, Cook's right up the street. They've seen him umpty-ump times. So he's right on their front burner, as opposed to Oakland Raiders running back who you might see three times a year.
They look at Cook and Fournette.
Saviors.
And McCaffrey even, maybe. And they're looking at the, pie in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's a 1,500-yard runner.
Yeah.
He's going to average 4 points. He's going to catch 60 balls.
Like another work done, yeah.
And, Steve, that's just the way it is, for fans.
I understand.
And they look at Murray and they say, it's okay.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Given the Bucs had that gift from Doug Martin, when it looks like, in the sense of their salary, they don't have to pay him. They got off the hook. Not they wanted it. They didn't want it to go the way
it went. Nice choice of words, isn't it?
But they don't have to pay the guy.
Which is why he's unlikely to be a Buccaneer.
I'm not going to write off Latavius Murray if the Bucs want to fill that hole with a, and it is a hole, if you want to fill it with a legit running back, maybe that's the easy way out and go wild card with the receivers. I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't rule it out. I know he, I think it's just an Oakland thing that because we don't see him and he's off the radar and because all the sexy names in the draft, I don't know. I don't rule it out as we approach.
You wouldn't call it a big splash though, Lee. Not a big
splash. Not a big splash.
This podcast is over, Ira.
We want to wish DeKemper a very productive and healthy time in Indy.
Yes, Steve? Safe travels, fun travels. As this thing pops, he's already there, so I'm sure he's feasting on all kinds of fun and frolicking around.
Is there any question he'll be at St. Elmo's this week?
I'll have some shrimp cocktail,
shrimp
sure.
Cocktail.
I don't think there's much question.
Growing up in the Midwest, I went to college about 90 minutes from Indianapolis, Eastern Illinois. You know my Sean Payton story. I'll tell you, talk Kevin Duckworth and Kevin Seitzer sometime too. But I know how, and growing up in the Midwest, I know how quick winter can change. But right now, the forecast, balmy 50s and 60s for Indianapolis in the first week of March.
Balmy.
All right, Ira, I'll be home here with you, nice and balmy, as we do our thing.
And we'll be reading DeKemper's copy over there, Stephen.
Thanks again to EdmoresCadillacTampa.com, EdmoresCadillacBrandon.com. Which are the online homes of Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, presenting your podcast. And, of course, thanks for listening. Ira is doing his thing all over town, and we love him desperately as he approaches his 90th birthday, and we'll be celebrating that in a couple of weeks. All right, Ira, we'll see you soon.